It's actually been like a month or so since I've been on the show.
It's been a while, yes.
It's vacation and stuff. Yeah.
And today on the show, we are going to talk about Steel Toe. And I'm just going to switch to our guests, Zach and Dave. Hi, guys. How are you?
Good. How are you doing?
Good, good. So apparently, I'm actually not projecting that. I'm really working out the quirks here, you know? There you go.
Okay. Yeah,
now they can see you. Okay. Well, it's the first time I actually have Rich in the studio with me, and we have guests on Skype. So
okay.
I'm juggling the controls. Okay. So sorry about that. So guys, please tell us about Steel Toe. So when we look at the website, we see that Steel Toe is a set of tools for .NET developers to do cloud programming. More specifically, what is it?
Yes. So Steel Toe is for applications that are large monoliths, and they want to move from this kind of monolithic architecture, you know, because monoliths can slow down your deployment speed. It can be harder to change your code and move more to a microservices model. And so we've seen this pattern in our Java customers all the time. Like, they want to split their apps up. So Spring Cloud and Spring Cloud Services is kind of a packaging of all these ideals. In addition, Netflix, they kind of package all this stuff together. And we are kind of taking that, all these patterns and practices, and bringing more to the .NET world.
I'd like to add that Steel Toe is a great set of tools for .NET developers who are interested in writing applications on Cloud Foundry. It's a new platform as a service that offers a tremendous developer experience, and the Steel Toe libraries with some special connectors and things really open up tremendous power in the platform.
Okay, so actually that's interesting. You've mentioned Netflix, and you also have ties with Pivotal. So can you tell us a little more about those companies and how they are backing the project? What's their relationship with the project exactly?
So Pivotal is the main sponsor of the project. Both Zach and I work for Pivotal. The Netflix components are actually open source components that we kind of subsumed both into Spring Cloud, and we're subsuming into Steel Toe.
Okay.
And those Netflix components are primarily geared towards solving some of the hard problems of developing real resilient applications with microservices. So we wanted to bring that functionality over to the .NET world.
Okay. One thing I've also noticed is that you have there is a lot that is actually done with Java. You need, for some components, such as the configuration manager, you need to have some Java components installed?
So the kind of the key is behind Steel Toe is the server components, they're all written in Java because we don't want to reinvent the wheel. But all the client-side libraries, these are all native libraries that are all in .NET. So since we're all talking HTTP at the end of the day, it doesn't really matter on the other side if it's .NET, if it's Java. I mean, you could write it in Haskell for all we care, just as long as we're talking the same protocols.
Right, exactly. You could substitute any of the microservices involved in the application with pretty much anything.
Yep.
Sure. And to clarify where we're coming from there, we really wanted to open up and bring to the .NET platform and to .NET developers the ability to communicate with some of those Spring Cloud server components that are already out there and might be out there in their enterprise. For example, Eureka for service registration and discovery, or the Spring Cloud configuration server.
I see. I have a question. So you talked about client and server. I assume all of this code is actually running on the server. So when you talk about the server components, do you basically just mean that this is a set of key services that you would call from within your cloud/server application? Is that the idea?
Yeah, that's the idea. So again, getting back to Zach's around Eureka, it's kind of like a shrink wrapped component that you can deploy whether into Cloud Foundry or just run locally. And it's just a Java server that's running. And so you might be running a server that has all your domain logic in it, but inside that server, you'll have a client that's actually talking to Eureka.
Right. So you've mentioned a couple of the services that come with Steeltoe. Could you actually maybe, I don't know how many there are, but could you just kind of go through at least the main categories of services so that people can get a general idea?
Yeah, sure. So first there is Config Server. Config Server is a way to kind of centralize your configuration and push it to all of your microservices at runtime without having to do any redeploys. Next there's Eureka. Eureka allows you to do service discovery and do things like, hey, I have container A running over here, container B running over here, and have them talk to each other without having to go through the, you know, like out to the outside world and come all the way back.
Got it.
The next thing that we're working on right now is Hystrix support. So if you're familiar at all with the circuit breaker patterns, and you can actually find this pattern in libraries like Poly in the .NET community right now. It's a way to say, hey, I've hit this service so many times and it looks like it's fallen over. Let's do some alternative code path versus trying to overload the system. In the future, we're going to look at a little bit around tracing and distributed tracing with things like Zipkin. But yeah, that's kind of where we're at right now.
Makes sense. So when you talked about service discovery, is there some kind of a service registry, or is service discovery more dynamic than that?
Yeah, so there's a, basically Eureka acts as a service registry.
Okay, makes sense.
Which one do I want to hit?
So we were talking about the components in Steeltoe, and in addition to those specific servers, most of them map directly to one Netflix or Spring project or another. We've also built in quite a few little goodies for .NET developers who really just want to get to work in the cloud and specifically on Cloud Foundry. And those include connectors for some common backing services, things like Redis or RabbitMQ. There are also connectors for databases like MySQL and Postgres.
Makes sense. Now, you said that this Steeltoe works great on Cloud Foundry. I have two questions about that. One is, does that tie into the .NET build pack? And then the second one is, can you use Steeltoe outside of Cloud Foundry?
Let me answer the second question first. Yes, you absolutely can use Steeltoe outside of Cloud Foundry. With that said, we really are trying to create the experience for Cloud Foundry to make it really like a simple one-stop shop.
Sure.
Answering the first question, which I'm totally blanking out right now. Can you say it again, please?
So I'm not an expert on Cloud Foundry, but my understanding is that there's this concept of build packs. And
yes,
that there is a .NET build pack for Cloud Foundry.
Sure, I can take this question if that's okay.
Yeah, go ahead.
So right now, Cloud Foundry actually supports running .NET Core applications with a new .NET Core build pack, and it runs those applications in Linux containers. And so to answer that part of it, absolutely, these Steeltoe components are built to run with an application, whether it's implemented on Windows or on Linux, in .NET Core or in the .NET 4.6 desktop CLR. And so it's also possible on Cloud Foundry, just to be perfectly clear, to run Windows applications on a Windows 2012 R2 stack, and Cloud Foundry brings its own containerization logic into Windows so that you run those applications in containers. And those Steeltoe components work over there as well. So really, this is meant to be something that's flexible, a set of tools, a framework that you can use really regardless of the platform and the specific set of .NET libraries that you're using.
Yeah, to add to that a little bit, we really see this collection of components as a way for these large enterprises to iterate on their current monoliths and bring them to a .NET Core world. I mean, obviously, .NET Core just dropped. No one's going to be able to turn around and say, hey, I want to port, you know, like your msdn.com, you know, this week to .NET Core. But if we can port small pieces and we can get those small pieces sectioned off using Steeltoe, we can take it on a case-by-case basis. So maybe the first thing you do is section off some pieces, still running on Windows. But as new libraries kind of mature and there's more .NET Core support in the community, you can start bringing some of these pieces over to the Linux side.
So that's really kind of an interesting vision statement, And just to summarize it, you could say that Steeltoe is really trying to enable maybe .NET shops that are using Cloud Foundry or moving on to Cloud Foundry to take what they have today and then move it into that .NET Core microservices running in Linux containers future.
Right. So you actually said something really interesting there, which is I can use Steeltoe in a heterogeneous environment. So I could have some of my existing application on Windows, potentially even using .NET Framework, and then start to build .NET Core apps either on Windows or Linux, and I can kind of do some mix and match there, and it all works. Is that right?
Absolutely. Yep.
That's the dream.
Yep.
Yeah. So
heterogeneous dream.
I know that customers that we have, and I'm pretty sure this is a pretty natural reaction, is they get pretty uncomfortable when they have to do like this big thing. It's like, oh, if you want to use this, you have to move everything over all at once, and it's a big bet. It sounds like it doesn't have to be that way.
And that's the experience that we're trying to provide.
Yeah. So can you tell us a little bit about I guess two questions. One is, how old is Steeltoe? When did it come about? And the other one is, tell us a little bit about adoption, like if there's any customers that you're working with and deployments and that kind of thing.
Do you want to take that one, Zach?
Sure. So this was first conceived of at the end of the year last year. So we're coming up on the first year anniversary of Steeltoe. We've been working on it sort of. It started kind of in Skunkworks at first. And we're on the verge of releasing our first RC1, or what we're packaging as a release candidate, of a real set of very valuable, useful functionality that we hope will get some adoption. So given where we are in that cycle, while we've had quite a bit of customer interest, it's probably a very short list of folks that are actively using this today. And so our goal for that RC1 is to really broaden that list out. And that's also one of our ulterior motives for being on the show today.
Yep.
I'm pretty sure we're good with that. Yeah, we're totally good with that. Is there a support story? If you're talking to some, huge company that wants to make a bet on this and they think it's, great technology and a great fit for them, What would their story be on support?
So that's a really good question. And if that company that we're talking about already has a support relationship, a commercial relationship with Pivotal, say, for example, they're using Pivotal Cloud Foundry, or they might be a Java shop and using TC Server and some of the Spring components, then in that case, Steeltoe would be supported by Pivotal. If we are talking about customers that are living in the open source world and just want to consume these open source bits, the team is actively working with folks in the community to support them. There's actually a Slack channel that you can self-register for and interact with the engineers in real time or near real time. And there are also some other communication channels to speak to them. And so I think we've got both sides of it covered there.
So a few months ago, we had Akka.net as the topic of the show. Can you tell us a little bit about how this relates to something like Akka.net? Is it really very similar? What are the key differences and so on?
To me, Akka and I guess Akka.net, since they're more of these actor-level frameworks, there's a higher granularity of your service in those cases. It's kind of like the Erlang model, right, where you have these little objects floating around and, object A is talking to object B and, they do what they do. Steeltoe is a little bit less fine-grained than that. It's more the model of, hey, we have a team that owns these services, or maybe even just one service. And we have another team owning this service, and how do these two teams communicate and kind of have a way to collaborate as they do deployments without actually having to look inside their code bases?
Okay.
Makes sense. let's see. Do you, are there any, like you said that Steeltoe has these great components, like the service discovery was one of them. Obviously, when you go to a cloud like Azure or AWS or so or something else, they have a ton of services as well. Storage and data are usually kind of the number one ones that you start with. Are there any cases where Steeltoe does something, either wrapping, having abstractions over common cloud services, or it kind of stays out of that space entirely?
What Zach mentioned earlier, the cloud connectors are kind of in that space. So right now the cloud connectors are mainly for Cloud Foundry supported services, but I mean, there's no reason that there couldn't be cloud connectors for things like, S3 or any kind of thing on Azure.
Okay. So I guess the base capability for something like that is there. And either you or the community might develop that further is kind of what I'm hearing.
Yep.
Makes sense. Another question is, you've mentioned Spring a couple of times. I've definitely heard of Spring before within the Java community. The part that I didn't quite grasp is that something that is Pivotal the sponsor of that project as well? Like, or you guys just use that component a lot?
So that is really what brought us to Steeltoe. So absolutely, Pivotal employs the large majority of the Spring framework committers today. And some of the projects that came out of that team, the Spring Cloud project in particular, had some really interesting components that we wanted to be able to leverage easily from other languages. So if you're using them from within the Java world, there's this experience, Spring Boot, for example, where all of the configuration is built automatically, and it just, a lot of it seems like magic. But then if you want to consume those things from other languages, there was a lot of hand-rolling that you had to do. And so we wanted to do that hand-rolling for you in advance in .NET, and that's really where we're coming from.
Let's be very clear, though. We're not trying to rewrite Spring.NET. We're only, like, I am a .NET developer through and through. I don't want us to try to, like, reinvent the whole XML Bing configuration nonsense. I just want us to take the good parts of the Netflix components and, you know, live in a microservice world where, you know, Java developers can write their Java, and over here we can write our .NET, and we never have to worry about what they're doing over there.
Totally. It's a little bit like a .NET developer using Hadoop or something like that then.
Exactly. Sure. That's a perfect analogy, actually.
So then continuing, or Redis, actually, but continuing on that path, I assume Spring is moving forward. What is the kind of the latency of adoption of Spring and other kind of non-.NET dependencies that you have, either with just pure bug fixes that are in Spring that might be super important for, you know, stability, reliability, security, or actually major feature versions? What does that look like? Or do I even care as a consumer of Steeltoe?
I think you don't really care. And there's certainly no goal for us in Steeltoe to try to maintain feature parity with any specific Spring library component. It was really a desire to take some things that we thought were really popular and really useful and valuable and not really well represented in the .NET ecosystem and make them available there.
Makes sense. Let's focus on then security in particular. You know, lots of dev platforms depend on OpenSSL, for example, including .NET Core. And so obviously our customers care a lot about our security, like our update plan for that kind of a component. Do you have a similar need or story with Spring on security updates of that dependency?
So just the platform in general, assuming you're running on Cloud Foundry, we have kind of a 48-hour CVE window where, let's say there is an OpenSSL vulnerability. Within 48 hours, we issue what we call a stem cell. You can think of it as an underlying OS for the entire architecture. And basically, this underlying OS gets rolled through the entire system with no downtime. So if you have an OpenSSL, if you're depending on OpenSSL, you'll be totally fine.
Cool.
So I think the bottom line is that, Pivotal seems to be a very good steward and very reacts very quickly when those vulnerabilities are found. So whether that's in the Cloud Foundry product directly or whether that's part of the Spring framework, you can expect that there's a very quick turnaround.
Nice.
I had some more general questions about a microservice architecture in general. How do you deal with, by definition, you have an architecture that relies on many services interacting together. How do you deal with a service that you don't own and is down, for example? How does that work?
Can you give an example, like if I'm depending on, let's say, Twilio or?
Yeah, for example. So okay. the service is down. How does the application cope with that and recover and find other paths to survive?
Got it. So kind of what I mentioned earlier, the whole idea of Hystrix and a circuit breaker is, yes, you cannot control all your dependencies, especially when they're third-party dependencies. So let's say Twilio or let's say you're using Facebook API, and for some reason the Facebook API goes down. Instead of trying to hit that over and over again and possibly causing logic in your application to say, hey, we're not going to go, we're just going to throw an exception. The idea is that, hey, if the Facebook API is not an integral part of your application, you can still provide business value to your users without it, then you can go down this alternate code path and be like, hey, this is not available right now, but you know, here's some cache data that is probably pretty relevant to you.
So it's all about failing gracefully and having this kind of a default fallback behavior.
So what I hear is, it's mostly the best practice kind of guidance, and you have a component, which is this Hystrix one, if that's what you called it, mm-hmm. that basically is kind of the linchpin of that whole thing, but it's mostly the pattern.
Exactly.
Yes, the pattern is the circuit breaker pattern.
Yeah. And the Hystrix thing just helps you implement that. Is that right? As a user.
Sure. And just by way of explanation, Hystrix is Netflix's implementation of this pattern. And they open sourced a bunch of components to make that work. And then to manage a microservices application with multiple components, maybe running multiple instances, and combining all that information together in an easy-to-use dashboard and being able to see it and control it at a high level. So those are the components that we're working on, leveraging in the platform in SteelToe. That's not something that exists today, but that's something that's on our roadmap.
Makes sense. This question might be a bit naive, but so I'm familiar with service breaker, like circuit breaker. Mm-hmm. As a concept, I had always thought of it as like an in proc sort of library that you would use to help with circuit breaker. But you said you're dependent on the Netflix implementation, which I assume is not written in .NET. So which I'm guessing then that is it a additional service that you call to help you with that? Can you expand on that a bit?
Yeah, so your initial intuition around it being an in-proc thing is actually correct. So we're going to do some kind of rewrite there. So either integrate with existing solutions like Poly or do a full rewrite from the Java code.
Okay, yeah, because calling another service to get the circuit breaker part is kind of a bad plan if that service goes down.
What if it goes down?
Yeah, so, okay, that part makes sense. Just because, it felt like it inherently has to be in proc.
Yep.
Cool.
Can you talk about the general problems, the general pitfalls that people might fall into when they're migrating from a monolithic kind of application to microservices?
I think one of the biggest pitfalls, at least we see, not necessarily in enterprise community, but just in the community of developers in general right now, is people moving to a microservices architecture before they need to. If you can get away with doing a monolith, don't use SteelToe. Just continue using your monolith. If you have a monolith where you have 200 developers working on it and you're deploying once a year, then let's talk and see if we can split that up a little bit. But if you're a team of four developers and you want to go to microservices right away, we would caution you against that until you have a real burning desire or burning need to do so. a lot of things that we see too is, hey, we want to move to a microservices architecture, and so we'll throw like an enterprise service bus in the middle of it so everyone can integrate there. So what you've done now is you've have a new monolith, just the monolith is the service bus, and now you can never touch that or never change that. So I think it's important that every service kind of owns its own contracts and say, hey, you talk through this and I'll respond with that.
And I'll further say that one of the patterns that we see with our customers is to take that monolith and then not to try to rewrite the whole thing just arbitrarily, but rather as there are new pieces of functionality or rewrites of specific components that are happening, at that point to pull those off into separate microservices to the extent that that's possible. And really, if that process happens over a period of time, it's possible to start to shrink that monolith down to a lot smaller and then end up with orchestrated microservices outside of it.
One more anti-pattern as well. We see customers and users take a microservices architecture and end up reintegrating into the same database. So like if their database goes down, then all that awesome microservices resiliency just goes out the window. And it's just so easy to, oh, let me just grab this one row while I'm in here. And I don't want to go through the whole layer just to grab this one row, right? And then you end up with a, you know, distributed monolith.
So what I'm hearing here is the biggest pitfall would be to look for single points of failure and identifying them and attacking those first. Correct.
Yeah, there's a good term for it. I can't remember right now, but to think when you're doing microservices, to try to find good context boundaries. You don't want to split something where it ends up having to do like 50 joins just to get everything back. The idea is like this small section that makes sense as an independent entity. This is what we want to take, and then we can decide if we need to scale this or, as you said, is this a single point of failure that we need to make sure that doesn't go down instead of, again, the distributed monolith model where you have everything kind of spread out.
That makes sense. So would you say that the right way to look at that is maybe to analyze your dependencies in your current project and try to follow the threads of dependencies, and which can sometimes be something that when you build an application, you might actually unconsciously do that, where you create a lot of dependencies and circular dependencies that are very difficult to entangle.
Yep.
So you've talked about this progressive approach where you kind of replace bits and pieces of the application with microservices where that makes sense. But if the application was designed as something monolithic, isn't that actually very, very difficult to achieve because of that kind of mess of entangled dependencies that you may have?
Oh yeah, it absolutely can be difficult. I think the key is to do it in an iterative approach though. Like before you even section off a microservice, maybe section this specific piece of business logic into an in-process service, you know, like the service architecture that, you know, we all kind of know about. And once you're kind of in a model where your code at least makes sense, then you can start talking about, hey, let's call this over the network versus just calling in process so it doesn't end up being retangled as the days go by.
Yeah, so it sounds like, again, it's this surgical approach where you do things very carefully and progressively without endangering the whole application.
Yeah, and continuing to deliver value to your users. And you don't want to go off and try to rewrite the whole thing as a microservices approach. If you can pull off one microservice, you've incrementally improved the quality of your code, but you're still providing value to your users and continue iterating on your product.
Mm-hmm. And you've also split out the development work so that you can have independent pipelines and independent delivery times. And I mean, I think that that's the real big value of microservices is the impact on the development organization as much as anything else.
Yeah, there's a rule called Conway's Law, and it's kind of like how you organize your development organization is reflected in your code. So we want to move to small cross-functional teams instead of having these large monolithic teams that don't have any ownership.
Yeah, we're familiar with Conway's Law. There's two major trends going on in the software industry now, well, at least two. Containers is one, and microservices is another. Mm-hmm. And it didn't just start today. It's been going on for a little while. And one of the things, just looking at it, they both make sense. Lots of value there. But one of the things that's resonating with me with what you've just been saying is every time one of these huge trends come up, as much as I like them, there's always this little bit that like feels like people are overdoing it. And it's like, oh, okay, you know, people in, say, the Valley are doing containers, so I should be doing it too, or microservices.
And buzzwords.
Yeah, it's totally the buzzwords thing. Right. If we go back, you know, 10 years ago, it was service-oriented architectures, and which obviously actually have some similarity to microservices, but that was definitely more on the people were building monoliths back then. Mm-hmm. And I just always think that there's a bit of caution because, you know, 10 years from now or 5 years from now, there's actually going to be something else, and people are going to be moving away from what we're doing now. And so I really like this idea that you're kind of propositioning, which is make sure that you clearly understand what, say, containers or microservices are intended to deliver, what the value proposition of that is, and then make sure you're getting that, because it's easy to, like, inappropriately use these new cool industry trends, and you think you're doing the thing, mm-hmm. but you actually are not. You're actually abusing it or, yeah, not getting the value that you think you are. So anyway, that's just a little diatribe on my thoughts on that.
I think the hype around Docker is probably a great example of that.
Sorry, say that again.
I'm sorry. The hype around Docker is probably a great example of that, and there's even been a bit of a backlash lately against it.
Yeah, I mean, just to be clear, I'm not giving an anti-container sentiment at all. It's just, these things can get a little overdone, and people don't fully grasp why it is they're even doing this. So it's just common in our industry, decade after decade, this happens.
Yep.
Yep. And we'll continue.
Where's the new shiny thing?
Yeah, totally. So
we don't necessarily say that you have to use microservices. We don't necessarily say that you have to use containers. But steel toe, you should definitely jump on that bandwagon.
Yeah, for sure. Can you tell us a little bit of, like, say I'm watching this vodcast or whatever, the show. Steel toe, it's like, wow, this is like clearly the thing that I have been looking for. I haven't heard of steel toe previously. I'm going to go, you know, after lunch today, I'm going to go try this thing out. Do you have getting started kind of materials, and, you know, where should I go?
Yeah, we absolutely do. If you go to our website, steeltoe.io, we have a getting started guide to start playing with the configuration server. In addition, if you go on GitHub in the SteelToe OSS organization, there is a whole collection of sample applications that you can play with, particularly the music store, which I might actually get to demo today if we have enough time.
Sure.
But yeah, like, the idea is that when we built this, we want to make sure that people actually understand how to build this kind of architecture with their own apps, and not just, hey, we have all these discrete components, how do they all fit together?
Yeah, if I can give you a bit of feedback about the website. So I did follow that link that took me to the tutorial about the configuration. Mm-hmm. And I have the feeling that some people might actually think that this is it. This is just the configuration thing. So maybe you might want to clarify that. Feedback?
Yep. No, that's awesome feedback. Great. Thank you.
All right. Well, actually, if you have a demo, that's fantastic. Let's switch to that.
All right, awesome. Let me see if I can figure out a screen share in Skype.
Something is happening.
Yeah, and I need to find a way to... Oh, there you go.
Here we go.
All right, awesome. So there is a app from Microsoft called the Music Store application. which you can actually just find here at GitHub ASP.NET Music Store. So what we've kind of done is taken this Music Store application and reimagined it in a microservices architecture. Now, obviously this is contrived, just as we were talking before, like you don't need to split something this small into microservices. You can hold the whole code base in your head. But let's just imagine for a minute that this is Amazon.com, and obviously this is a huge sprawling application, and you know we have like all these miniature little services. So this is kind of where we're taking it from. So just to go through the application really quick so people have an idea of what actually the logic is involved. I'm going to register for a user. Okay, so now I have a user. I'm going to log into this store. And then let's go to the store. Let's say I want some pop music. I'll take the best of the men at work. That sounds awesome.
It's a classic.
Oh, yeah.
So is it going to be added to my shopping cart? Here we go. That's all I need. That's all I need to get through life is the best of men at work. So I'm going to check out.
Some of us are showing our age.
Hopefully there isn't all kinds of validation in all these fields. 1, 2, 3, 1, 2. All right, cool. So, I mean, again, this is a very contrived example, but imagine we just thrown through at Amazon.com and I bought this. So now that we kind of have an idea of the basic workflow of the application, let's talk about how this is kind of split into different pieces. So let me open this up. So we have four different components. We have Music Store UI, which is basically the presentation layer of the application. We have Music Store Service, which is kind of an aggregation of the other two services. We have an Order Service, which you can think of just like as a back-end office fulfillment system. Obviously, in this case,
it's just... You're breaking out a bit here.
But you can imagine that you're...
Yeah, we didn't hear any of that.
No.
Oh, no. Where should I start off from?
Talk us through the services again, yes. Dave.
Okay. So Music Store UI is basically the presentation layer of the application. It just contains all the views. Music Store Service, you can think of this as an aggregation of all the other services and kind of has the business-specific logic for running a music store. Order Service, that you can think of this as kind of a back-end office fulfillment system. Obviously, in this case, since we're not actually shipping any merchandise, it doesn't do much. But, you know, if you're calling out to, you know, whatever your fulfillment system is, then you could have potentially a ton of business logic here. And Shopping Cart Service, you can think of this as something like Magento or Spree or, some kind of in-house shopping cart that Amazon had written. So how are all these pieces tied together? So we're using the components that we talked about, the Spring Cloud configuration server client, to centralize all the application configuration. So all these different services have different backing stores. So the config server kind of contains all the client-side the credential information for all the applications. There's also a Eureka server client, so all the services can talk to each other. We're using steel-toe connectors to actually connect to MySQL. And I guess we can optionally use the Redis cache, but I'm not actually have that set up. So if you look through here, we have instructions to set everything up locally. And so the one I'm running right here is local. Just a matter of a bunch of Docker containers. let me show these off real quick. So like there's a Docker container that contains the configuration server stuff all ready to go. Same for Eureka. And then we have all these different services. Oops. We have all these different services running right here. So for example, when you hit the shopping cart, it's calling out to Eureka to find where the music store service is and returning data that way. So that's kind of the basic idea. In addition, we can push this to Cloud Foundry. And so I have a Cloud Foundry instance up with all these services as well. So this is nice for production because A, you get all the high availability guarantees of Cloud Foundry. If one of these services disappears, the scheduler will re-bring it back up. You can scale your instances. So if I'm feeling daring, I might scale my shopping cart up to 2 and see if I can do this without breaking everything.
To clarify, this instance of Cloud Foundry is running locally on your computer. Is that right?
Yes. This is actually what we call PCF Dev. This is a local instance of Cloud Foundry that you can run on your own laptop. Okay. So since it's running on my laptop, it would not be able to scale that much further. But in a real Cloud Foundry, this can scale to easily hundreds or thousands of instances. And then we can also take a look at the services that all these different microservices are bound to. So there is the service registry, which is, again, it's basically just Eureka. And you can see it's bound to all the different applications. And you can do things like take a look at what... let's see if this works. You can take a look at all the different services that are bound to Eureka. So right now it says the music store, order processing, and shopping cart are all registered. In addition, you can look at kind of the configuration settings for your config server.
Makes sense.
And this is just pointed at a Git repo. That this can be any repo that you control, though. It doesn't necessarily have to be in GitHub. So yeah, this is the basic overplan for some kind of real application that's not just the Hello World.
Right, and so with the screens that you've just been showing us, would those be the same screens that I would see if I was building a Java application or a Node application? I'm guessing that those were not specific to the .NET, to Steeltoe, or is it specific to Steeltoe?
No, this is all just generic screens that come with Cloud Foundry.
Okay, that's what I thought. Makes sense.
Yeah. And can so, you, like, oh, go ahead.
Can you show us, Dave, the list of those microservice components?
That'd be
yeah,
nice
sure.
To see.
Yeah, right here.
So this is the screen where you would see any application that's running in this specific space in Cloud Foundry. And those could be applications written in any language. Those might be Java apps or Ruby apps or Node apps, and they just happen to be .NET apps in this case.
Makes sense.
All right.
Cool.
So yeah, I have a follow-on question. So I think the demos, that was a great demo. Definitely.
Thank you.
Yeah, pick something up from that. So I'm pretending to still be this customer. Love the demo. I now know how to get started. I did a prototype, showed my boss. He or she loved it. I'm going to go do the Cloud Foundry thing because that's kind of the one that you can advocate. Where do you guys tell your customers or suggest to your customers to go host their apps if they want to do the Cloud Foundry thing?
That's a great question. If you're a small startup, you can always go to run.pivotal.io, which is also known as Pivotal Web Services. If you're a large enterprise and you're lucky enough to have Pivotal Cloud Foundry in-house, then you can just use whatever your operators have set up.
And to clarify, run.pivotal.io, anyone can go and sign up for an account there and push applications to run in the cloud. It's actually hosted out on Amazon Web Services. So for a developer looking to get started, that's certainly a place you could go and sign up for a free account. I think it's free for 60 days or something.
Yeah.
Okay, makes sense. Now, if I'm not doing the Cloud Foundry thing and I'm already using, my monolithic application was already deployed to another cloud, like for example Azure, then will it be obvious to me how I would use Steeltoe without the Cloud Foundry piece?
You can certainly still use all the same components. It's just a matter of now you have to manage all these small services by yourself. So, at the end of the day, these are all just servers, right? They can run on any VM. Just now you have to manage the VM instead of getting the nice integrations with Cloud Foundry.
Oh, I see. So, is it fair to say then, like, orchestration is a big part of the container microservice trend that we talked about earlier?
Absolutely.
So, when you use Cloud Foundry, you kind of get the orchestration piece, and if you don't, then you have to figure out the orchestration piece yourself.
Yeah, that's right. The big value add.
That starts to make sense.
But then to answer the question about how do you get that information, how do you go about it? In that GitHub repo for Steeltoe OSS, there is quite a bit. There are quite a few samples, and they're broken down so that you can see which ones would be running on Cloud Foundry, which sample would you use. If you wanted to go even specific into the .NET Framework version, if you have .NET Core and you're running it locally versus .NET Framework 4.6 and you're running it on Cloud Foundry, there are samples for all those permutations.
Makes sense. I got it now. Do we have any other questions?
I don't.
I don't. Do you guys want to say anything in parting? And then I think we have some announcements
yes.
we should make at the end.
Yes, absolutely. Okay. We'll take a few minutes after these to
stuff. Yeah. Do you guys want to make a closing pitch since we don't have any more questions?
Yeah. One thing I definitely want to say, if you're at all interested in this, please join us at slack.steeltoe.io and come ask any questions that whether you just need help getting the Hello World started or you just want to learn more about the product in general, we're happy to help.
And I'd like to add to that this is an open source project and we love help from the community. If you'd like to get involved, please reach out via steeltoe.io.
Nice.
Well, thanks a lot, guys. That was great.
Thanks for having us.
Well, you're welcome. So, Rich, we do have some announcements. Something happened yesterday.
Yes. So the big announcement yesterday is we released .NET Core 1.0.1. It's the first significant update since we released 1.0.0 a few months ago. And there's nothing super, super significant by virtue of it just being that last number. It's really a patch style update. We wrote a blog post on the .NET blog about it. You do need to move forward to this .1 release to continue to get support. We support the outer edge always. And another key thing is there actually was a security advisory for one of the ASP.NET components that's also referenced on the blog. So it is actually indeed important to move to this new update. And certainly there'll be more updates in the future. And so go check that out.
Yeah, we'll put the link here. All right.
Exciting stuff.
It is. There were some seg faults that customers found on Linux.
Wow.
So it's great that we're getting, usage and customer feedback back. And then we're actually putting those improvements back into the product. And so this new release is definitely more reliable, more secure than what you had before. So again, another reason to go update to the new version.
And now signed on the Mac, right?
Yes, we had a signing problem. This is our second time, I believe, having a signing problem with our Mac PKG package. It's very embarrassing.
But it was very short-lived.
Yes, it was very short-lived. I think it was there for 24 hours. And we aspire never to have this problem again. Embarrassing.
Sorry I mentioned it.
It's okay. It's entirely a process-related problem. The reason is we don't have automated signing in place for our Mac builds, which we do for Windows. And so that's the reason that this has happened twice. So we need to get that automation in place.
And we will have some additional announcements about Net Standard and stuff.
Oh, yeah.
And MS Build that will follow within weeks.
Yeah, so we actually have had a lot of questions about .NET Standard 2.0. That's something that we're continuing to work on.
And details will be in the blog post.
Yeah, and we have a blog post that we have planned for the very near future, and we're trying to cover kind of all the most obvious questions and tell what the roadmap is for that. It's something we're definitely excited about, we haven't done a good enough job yet explaining what exactly this whole thing is and what it's for. So it's going to get solved soon, as well as the MS Build thing. That'll come second.
And that's about the time we had.
Yeah.
So thanks again for being on the show, guys.
Thanks for having us.
We'd love to come back too in a couple months and report on our new progress.
That sounds good.
Sure. Yeah. Please do keep us posted. And if you have any blog posts as well, we're happy to put them in weekin.net as well. So yep, absolutely.
Awesome.
So thanks everyone. And we'll see you again next week. Bye.
See ya.